payments industry is both complex and ever-changing, with new regulations, rising costs, and an increasingly essential customer experience to consider. Retailers need to stay informed. Retail Relay is your weekly source of bite-sized payments insights brought to you by CMSPI, an independent global payments consultancy supporting merchants to maximize the value in their supply chain. From retail trends to regulatory updates, we cover it all. By bringing unique visibility into trends across different industries and channels, we dissect the complexities into digestible insights. If you want to learn about all things payments, you're in the right place. Hello and welcome to CMSPI's Retail Relay. I'm Robbie, speaking out of Manchester in the UK.
And I'm Callum, speaking out of Atlanta in Georgia in the US.
And in this episode, we're going to take a closer look at the very recent Visa and MasterCard interchange fee litigation judgment by the UK's Supreme Court. So we're going to start by giving you some background on the history of interchange fee litigation, as well as moving on to the findings from the judgment itself. And then we'll finish off with an explanation of what the actual implications could be, not just for UK-based merchants, but for merchants around the globe. Just before we start the podcast today, the topic is on legal issues, and myself and Callum are not lawyers, and we are not providing legal advice with these updates, and they should not be treated as such. It is simply our interpretation of the publicly available judgment. So to start with then, we're going to look at the history of interchange litigation. And whilst this may sound like a relatively recent thing, we've had rulings in 2017, 2018, and now in 2020, actually, this has been rumbling on for decades now. And I believe it was actually 1992 from which these judgments almost stem from. And Callum, I know you've been close to it for a number of years, not quite back to 1992, but can you give us a bit of an overview of what the actual issues with interchange fees are and what's happened up till this point?
So these cases are heard according to European law. And I think that's a really important point to make here. So your first instinct might be, oh, it's a UK Supreme Court judgment, but really important to note, this is according to European law, and it's European anti-competition law, and specifically Article 101 of the Treaty of the Functioning of the European Union, which refers to a restriction of competition in the merchant acquiring market. And that's basically the argument that because you had these multilateral interchange fees, and we call them MIFs, within the system for decades, that was... they were non-negotiable, fixed and non-negotiable. It inhibits the ability of acquirers to compete for merchants' business in the acquiring market. And it set what we call a price floor, i.e., you know, the MIF interchange historically has been in Europe about 90% of all card fees. I mean, 90% of all the fees that merchants are negotiating with acquirers were non-negotiable. And there was a big price floor there, and that is restrictive of competition. So that's the fundamental argument the merchants have been going with here.
Yeah, absolutely. And merchants have certainly been miffed with MIFs for that entire time. And I guess the history of the litigation is with the original complaint made by Eurocommerce to the European Commission. If we look to the UK judgments, though, it all really started with a case brought by Sainsbury's, didn't it?
Yeah, well, the original case is actually the BRC, the British Retail Consortium, in 1992. It was then picked up by Eurocommerce, which is obviously a European wide merchant trade association. And then after that, it became in the early 2000s a topic of interest to the European Commission, who pursued it legally. And the first judgment came against MasterCard from the European Commission in 2007. MasterCard then appealed back to the General Court in 2012, and it then finally went to the ECJ, which is the most senior court in Europe, in 2014. So that's three different legal judgments, and MasterCard lost them all. Off the back of the 2012 judgment, so that's a general court one, which is May 2012, a number of largest retailers in the UK, including the likes of Tesco and Sainsbury's, etc., issued claims against the schemes because they kind of presumably saw which way the wind was blowing with it. And certainly, you know, in the case of some of those very large merchants who are paying tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of pounds of interchange fees every year. So certainly a big prize that was worth fighting for. So that kind of explained how these cases came around. What we've then had since then is we've had three different UK cases that pointed in very different directions and were very confusing. And then the Court of Appeal in the UK brought that all together in July 2018. And now we'll have a Supreme Court judgment now. So this is the eighth judgment in this space in a period of 13 years. So we have the three initial European judgments, the initial three UK judgments, then the UK Court of Appeal, and then the Supreme Court. So it's taken eight cases to get to this point. But we're here, and it's very good news for merchants.
Yeah, so this judgment is almost, it's not the absolute final word, is it? But it is some semblance of finality in this litigation in order to clarify some of the key arguments. So like you said, Callum, a very positive move to get some clarity on all of these arguments, and something that we will cover in the next section. So now on to that all-important Supreme Court judgment, which was announced on the 17th of June 2020. And we were all sat there at CMSPI watching it on the online portal, waiting to see what would be handed down. And essentially, the judgment was structured into five key issues. And we are well aware that going through the legalese of very detailed payments industry legal arguments is probably not something that you want from your maybe your morning podcast. So instead of going into each of the areas in a huge amount of detail, what I'm going to challenge Callum to do is to summarize these five issues in 90-second bouts. So if we keep the boxing references throughout. So Callum, I'm going to introduce one of the issues, and I want you to summarize for the listeners in 90 seconds what the judgment was and what it means for the litigation cases going forward. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it's daunting. And I promise anybody listening, I don't have a script. I would say if anybody listening does want the full 5-hour version of this, then I'd be very happy to speak to them and deliver it. But for now, we're going to have 5 90-second bouts, and let's see how I do.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck. And sure. I suppose your time starts now. So the first argument relates to Article 101(1) of the TFEU. What happened there?
So in order to be successful in a competition claim according to Article 101, there's two components. There's Article 101(1), which is a restriction of a claim, restriction of competition in the first place, and Article 101(3), which is to do with exemptions. This first issue of the five is solely on this restriction of competition issue. Now, the three UK judgments that I discussed before were conflicting in that regard. Some of the judgments said that there was a restriction of competition, and some of them said there wasn't. So some of them sided with the retailers, and some of them sided with the card schemes. Very confusing. What's happened here is it's gone to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal in July 2018 ruled emphatically in the merchants' favour. And thankfully for the merchants here in the Supreme Court, they have also ruled emphatically in the merchant's favour. So it's been decided that there is a restriction of competition in the merchant acquiring market because of this issue that we said before to do with price floors. And that is a really good start for the merchants. And we should note as well that it should be an absolute home run in this regard. It should be an emphatic victory and should be very, very difficult to argue in the future that there's not a restriction of competition. So overall, a very good start for merchants, and they are 1-0 in the lead. They've won the first round.
Moving swiftly on then to the second issue. And this one is slightly different and relates to Article 101(3), as you alluded to before. So issue number two is the burden of proof required to prove an exemption. And your time starts now.
Yep. So issues two and three refer to exemptions, which is the Article 101(3) issue I mentioned before. And an exemption essentially says that even if something is deemed to be restrictive of competition, it can still be legal up to a certain level if it's deemed to deliver wider economic benefits. Now, issue two here with respect to exemptions referred to a burden of proof issue. Now, it was common ground between both parties, but the obligation is on the defendants, either Visa or MasterCard, to prove that there's an exemption, as opposed to the merchants to prove that there's not an exemption. But the real issue here was about a level of proof required. So Visa and MasterCard argued economic evidence would be enough. So economic theory would be enough to prove what we call the system output argument, which is that because there are interchange fees, there are consumer rewards, and therefore higher spending at merchants. So that's what the schemes argued. And they argued that they only need economic theory. The merchants, on the other hand, said that there needed to be cogent empirical evidence to support that. And the schemes didn't have it. And in this regard, the Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the merchants, meaning that there needed to be cogent empirical evidence, and the schemes did not provide that.
And your time stops there. So you did well again to get in under the buzzer. Moving on to the third issue. So this is known as the fair share issue, and again relates to that Article 101.3. Who won that, and what does it mean for merchants?
So there are four criteria you need to fulfill an exemption, and I won't go into all four. The second of those is really important in this case, and it states that consumers must receive a fair share of the resulting benefits of the restrictive practice, in this case, MIFs. So really what matters is the definition of consumers. Now, the card market is what's called a two-sided market, where there's the acquiring market and the issuing market. Now, the consumers in the issuing market are clearly consumers themselves, but in the acquiring market, the consumers are actually said to be merchants. Now, what the schemes are saying here is that even though merchants might have been disadvantaged here, consumers have been advantaged. And what they're saying is all that matters to qualify an exemption is what's the net of the two. So you've got a balancing seesaw effect. They're just saying, is the overall average seesaw higher than it was before? What the merchants are saying is that both parties need to benefit. So the merchants are saying that merchants as themselves would have to benefit from interchange fees as well as consumers. And obviously it's very difficult, given the size of interchange fees, for the schemes to argue coherently that merchants have benefited from interchange fees. So it's an important battleground. In this, it's 3-0. It's for all three rounds to the merchants, because the Supreme Court ruled in the merchants' favor, and the merchants need to benefit from MIFs to qualify under Article 101.3.
Excellent. So just on time there, and great to hear that the merchants are 3-0 up so far. For the fourth issue, and it would be an important away goal for the schemes, the fourth issue is the Broad Acts issue. And it covers some of the pass on as well. So what happened there, and did the schemes manage to win this one?
The Broad Acts issue of a pass on issue is not to do with either Article 101.1 or Article 101.3. It's once you've already lost, but it's to do with the quantum of the claim or the amount that you get paid out in damages. So what the schemes are arguing here is that we're arguing that merchants pass on illegal interchange fees to consumers in the form of higher prices. And in those instances where they can successfully do that, it's the consumers and not the merchants that have suffered. Now, that's obviously a really difficult issue for merchants. Now, in the previous case, in the Court of Appeal case, the Court of Appeal ruled in the merchants' favor that the schemes needed to provide a very heavy amount of evidence and quantify the exact amount that the merchants passed on. Unfortunately, this one has actually ruled in favor of the scheme, so it's 3-1. And as you say, Rob, an important away goal, because the judge ruled that this would require unreasonable precision, i.e. it would be way too heavy a burden for the schemes to prove that pass on. And as a result, the Broad Acts approach will be appropriate. And the relevance of that for merchants is, unfortunately, it could dilute the payout that they get by quite a significant amount.
So an unfortunate loss on that particular battleground then. But we come to the final issue of the five. And this covers what's known as AAM's cross appeal. So AAM being a group of largest retailers in the UK, and essentially was a request that the 101.3 issue needed referring back to the CAT for reconsideration. So What were the issues there, and who eventually won that argument?
So it's important to note here that there are two claimants. So on one hand, there's Sainsbury's, and on the other hand, there is the Asda, Argos and Morrisons Group, otherwise known as the AAM Group. Now, in the Court of Appeal case, which is the July 2018 one, I said, on the exemption issue, they said it wasn't proven enough, so they sent it back to the Competition Appeal Tribunal for reconsideration. Now, what AAM said, as an individual, not Sainsbury's, AAM said that this was an erroneous finding, and that there was enough proof presented to the Court of Appeal to reject the scheme's argument on the exemption issue. And they basically said it should be thrown out rather than having to go back to the CAT after it's heard by the Supreme Court. Now, thankfully for AAM, so the Supreme Court ruled in their favor here. So the Supreme Court is saying, yep, exemption was already sorted in the Court of Appeals case. It should have been thrown out and it doesn't need to go back to the Competition Appeal Tribunal for reconsideration. Unfortunately, though, because Sainsbury's didn't make this cross appeal, the Sainsbury's element of the case does go back to the Competition Appeal Tribunal, and that will happen possibly next year. So essentially, the final score is 3-1 to Sainsbury's, but 4-1 to AAM.
Thanks, Callum. You've done fantastically well there to keep those explanations in time. So very well done. And in summary then, so a very, very important case for merchants in the UK. 5 key issues, merchants won on 4 of them. But that broad axe approach is something that merchants will need to be very, very careful with in the future cases as this rumbles on into the future. So for the final topic of the episode, we've spoken about the journey and process to get to this point. We've spoken about the key battlegrounds that have been won and lost in terms of the litigation. But we want to go into what does that actually mean for UK merchants now in the context of this litigation specifically, but also the rest of the world and whether there are broader implications in terms of the legality of interchange as a concept. So first of all, Callum, what do UK retailers have to do now? What is the next step for this case in the UK?
So a number of retailers have already issued claims. In May 2012, as I said at the start, it was only for really large guys, for, you know, for really big supermarket chains in particular. But subsequent to other cases that have gone in the merchants' favour since then, we've seen a lot of UK large retailers issue claims, and there are now hundreds of UK large retailers that have claimed, some in groups, some individually. There's a real mix out there. And obviously for those guys, it's straightforward. They may wish to negotiate with directly with the schemes, and we might find that their negotiating position has been strengthened by this judgment. Or they may wish to proceed with a full court case, just like Sainsbury's and AAM, on the basis that they're likely to get a higher payout if they do go through that full route. That's ultimately their decision and the decision that they can make with their legal teams. Now, there are some merchants that haven't yet issued claims. And certainly, I think for any large merchant, any merchant with maybe more than 50 or 100 million pounds of annual revenue that hasn't issued a claim should be very interested here. Now, under UK law, you can claim back 6 years for transactions in England, Northern Ireland and Wales, and 5 years for transactions taking place in Scotland. Now, obviously, the IFR came in interchange regulation came in December 2015, and that meant that fees are lower, which in theory dilutes your payout. So even if it's only for 4.5 years of the 6 years, you're only getting back the regulated rates. That would still be a significant amount of money. So, you know, essentially, depends where you are. You can get back from 6 years before the date that you issue the claim. Depends on how big you are as a merchant. Depends on your appetite to settle or to litigate. You know, a number of factors that will depend on your cash flow and all sorts of things internally. But you need to work out a strategy for this. And this judgment has changed the dial, not just for Sainsbury's and AAM, but for all merchants that have active and potential claims against the schemes in the UK.
And it's a really quite exciting number that represents the maximum potential claim value in the UK. It's, I believe, about £15 billion worth of interchange fees that have been paid. Mm. That's just over the last 6 or 7 years. And as you mentioned, you know, a number of retailers have already locked in their claims for years before that. So that number could even increase. But if we look at bringing in the rest of Europe as well, interchange fees paid across Europe actually amount to about 68 billion euros across that time period. Do you see that European merchants are going to have a similar opportunity here, or are there further barriers in place to this sort of judgment being made on a European level?
Well, most important thing to note here, that although this is a UK Supreme Court decision, it's based heavily on European law, as I said before, Article 101 of the Treaty for Functioning of the European Union. And even post-Brexit, that means that there is still relevance here for merchants outside the UK within Europe because of the nature of that legal framework.
So what we would advise here is that any interested merchants, we'd recommend that you reach out to legal representation that's involved and has expertise in this area. And essentially what they will allow you to do is to determine whether a claim can be lodged in the UK, and if not, what relevance the decision will have on a purely European claim.
It's something that European merchants should definitely be considering. So yeah, don't necessarily think that there's no read across to Europe. I think there potentially is, and it's definitely worth pursuing if you have significant operations outside of the UK within Europe.
And what does this mean as well for regulation? Of course, we have interchange regulation in Europe set at 0.2% for debit cards, 0.3% for credit cards. But based on the decision here, interchange fees could actually be deemed illegal at any level above zero. And then surely the IFR, the existing regulation, can't stand up. There's got to be something revised as part of this. And I know the IFR is being reviewed currently. So does this mean that European merchants will be able to benefit from 0% interchange in the future? Or is there still a little bit more to it than just a straight read across, as you said?
Yeah, but there's more to it than that, unfortunately. It would be nice if it was just a straight, oh yeah, from tomorrow there's no more interchange fees from a merchant perspective. No, it's a lot more complicated than that. So one of the defenses used by the schemes in this was that because the regulated rates are there at a certain level, that would mean that they're legal. But the Supreme Court made it very clear that within European law there is a distinction between Article 101 and then regulated levels, i.e. in order to regulate fees, you don't have to go through an Article 101 test. And now that we subsequently have an Article 101 test, there's definitely an argument that it would be appropriate for the European Commission to remove interchange fees and for the UK regulator, payments regulator, to make that decision in the UK market. As merchant advocates, that's certainly something we will be pushing for here. But I think there's a lot of work to be done and a lot of complexity to wade through before that becomes a reality.
Absolutely. And I guess it's not just Europe where there's still complexity, but it does still set some sort of, maybe not legal precedent, but at least bolsters arguments against interchange globally. Interchange is a global phenomenon, paid on any card transaction. And we have regulated rates in Australia, China, in the US. And ultimately, those regulators are going to be looking to this judgment and having potentially a rethink of how their current regulation is structured, because it is calling into question, again, the legality of interchange fees at all. So the potential to have a real global impact with this, and of course, that could be hundreds of billions of dollars for merchants globally. So a really, really exciting prize and a fight that I don't think is quite over, despite this very positive judgment.
It's not just European merchants that should be interested by this. Any merchant globally, particularly one that has an active litigation case against the schemes, but any merchant globally should be interested by this. And I think there is an opportunity here for merchants to be speaking to their local regulators and be bringing them to the attention of this judgment, which essentially, in my interpretation at least, rules that interchange fees are restrictive of competition and are not exempt, i.e. they're illegal. And that might only be one country and one judgment, but I think there's definitely potentially a read across there, and merchants need to be bullish about this. This is bargaining power, and they need to be driving this forward.
Absolutely. So to summarize then, for UK merchants off the back of this ruling, you have to file a claim if you haven't already, and the size of the prize is large enough. It's something that ourselves at CMSPI are supporting a number of UK-based merchants on, and looking to quantify the claim and support through the legal process. For European merchants as well, as you mentioned, Callum, if you have a UK presence, then again, that's something that you should be exploring. But for the rest of the world, it's much larger than that, and it is watch closely and start thinking about card fees in your own markets, because now is the time for real advocacy on this issue while interchange fees are in the spotlight and the chance to enact some real change on an issue that has been plaguing merchants for a number of decades now. So we hope this week's podcast has been insightful, and you can find out more about interchange fee regulation and litigation at cmspi.com under Resource Hub.
And if you find this helpful, please do share it with anyone you know who may find it interesting or enjoy it, and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast. We'd love to connect and get conversations going, so please do connect with us on LinkedIn at CMSPI or drop us an email. So finally, Ben, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back for more Payments Insights.